Hey everybody, welcome back to Voices from the Frontlines. This is your host, Eric Mann. We're on Tuesdays on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and on the web at kpfk.org. We're going to have our really exciting guest, Pete White, who's also now in studio. Pete's the co-founder and co-director of the Los Angeles Community Action Network, LA CAN. LA CAN builds leadership among downtown's LA's very low-income and often homeless community members, mostly oppressed nationality people of color, or predominantly African-American, fights for housing and civil rights, healthy food access, women's rights, violence prevention, and ending police abuse and harassment of this community. We'll be back with Pete in a minute. The Bus Riders Union Strategy Center, LA CAN, consider ourselves sister organizations. We're not just sort of vague allies, but I think we see ourselves as very close allies in the city. So, Pete, what do you see? We're going to get into some of the work that you're doing, of course, in Skid Row. But I guess you know how they say it. Well, what does this have to – what do buses have to do with LA CAN?
So this is Pete White. Hello, audience. Hello, listeners. I think from the outset, when we think about buses and transportation, at its core, we're talking about gentrification and how they use rail and buses and other measures to gentrify our communities, particularly rail. Why is this issue important for us? We're a poor people's organization based in downtown Los Angeles with members from downtown through South Central Los Angeles, most of whom are rent burdened and bus dependent. What we've also noticed is that as more and more conversations around these large scale developments, football stadiums and other things continue to come to light, simultaneously there are cuts to transit, bus corridors, and things of that nature because, you know, they're saying that we need rail to get rich folks into the cores of the city. And so we see all of these pressures, bus lines being cut, people being displaced from their communities, foreclosures, schools, and all of these other things being displaced from places that we've occupied forever as a core result of gentrification of our city.
Well, you know, Pete White from LA CAN, you know, I was just thinking this morning about how in the civil rights movement in the 60s, we used to say urban renewal is Negro removal. And I was thinking, God, you know, nothing's changed. Why don't you explain to our listeners what urban renewal and the so-called downtown plan that the mayor's carried out, what's been the impact on working class people of color in the inner city?
So let me first start by saying the new word in this era is gentrification. And it's interesting, when we started doing the work in downtown Los Angeles, the mainstream media wouldn't utter the word gentrification because they knew at that time, as it still is, that it was a bad word. Gentrification, quite frankly, means the displacing of poor communities, usually around, you know, poor communities of color, replacing them with upper earning, upper income white folk. And so that is what gentrification is. That has been the plan that Mayor Villaraigosa has been pushing since he's been in office. What has that meant? It's meant a couple of things. On the negative, it has meant that the city of Los Angeles has quite frankly attempted to suggest to developers and the rest of the city that downtown Los Angeles is not a community, that residents, that poor residents in downtown Los Angeles are merely transients, and that downtown is not their home, which is clearly a lie, because many of our members have been, you know, living in downtown for decades upon decades. LA CAN did some phenomenal work in terms of securing an ordinance that ensured poor people would have, you know, their right to remain in downtown Los Angeles and the various housing options. Shortly after we won that campaign, and that was a long-fought campaign, 5 years to be exact, after we won our ability to stay on the land, the mayor and then Chief Bratton unleashed 116 extra officers in the core of downtown Los Angeles. And so that was 116 officers to police 25 to 50 square blocks. Think about that. 116 officers to police 25 to 50 square blocks. What did that mean in terms of economics? The city of Los Angeles, in terms of out of the city general fund, spent about $5.7 million on homeless and housing services citywide. That's 469 square miles citywide. However, they spent $6 million per year on this policing effort to police 25 to 50 square blocks. That resulted in tens of thousands of arrests per year and many more jaywalking citations and frivolous citations. So it's very clear when we think about what the priority was. The priority wasn't to revitalize the community. The priority was to banish poor people of color, particularly African Americans, out of that area.
Well, as an organizer, one of the things that we know is that when possible, we're looking for stable structures that people can have a base and organize from, like a factory if we could, or like a reasonably stable low-income community could be like a base of resistance. But we also know the system is destroying just about every stable base of working-class life. So the factories are being closed down. The factories are constantly moving. The factories are small sweatshops. In your case, you're organizing some of the poorest of the poor. How do you develop, how does LA CAN develop like a core group of organizers and activists who can stay in the face of this incredible police, it's beyond harassment, police occupation?
Yeah, I mean, for us, for the purposes of this conversation, I think it's imperative. LA CAN understands organizing as the building of an organization that embodies the will and spirit of its constituents. And so oftentimes when we think about organizing, people are thinking protest. For us, we're more interested in building an institution that holds the desires and will of community residents. And so, you know, we can talk about the resilience of our leaders in downtown Los Angeles, and they are very resilient. But also, even more strongly, the belief in the need for the institution that challenges the CCA, that challenges a bankrupt government, has been the thing that has sold people from the blocks, from the parks, from the residential hotel units, from wherever they may be. And the organization being the place that holds the joy, the pain, the tears, and the fight. And we've been quite successful in doing that. The leaders have.
So basically what you're saying is that LA CAN can provide, in a situation of tremendous flux, that LA CAN is essential to providing some of the structure for resistance.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let me ask you this, Pete. You know that the Strategy Center, and I believe, well, I don't speak for you, but we're going to be opposing this Proposition R, which is another gentrifying effort to get another half-cent sales tax for another 30 years to build more rail to displace more people. Now, how do you act to the criticism that now they're going to say that the Strategy Center, the Bus Riders Union, we're always trying to spoil things and that, gee, they have this really wonderful plan for the city and we're so negative? How do you deal with the fact that certain people would say, gee, you oppose hotels, you oppose rail, you oppose the police? Don't you have any positivity? I mean, why are you always so negative?
Yeah, for a second, I almost forgot that we were in a radio station and I had a whole nother answer. I mean, I think the reality is this, Eric. Poor people, people of color, have their vision for this city. And we're not waiting, and we're not going to allow for our bankrupt politicians and government and their pandering to the development community to help or to tell us what our vision is. We're very clear. We're very clear that the system is broken. We know, our members, your members, my members, and members of other organizations know what happens when the talk, even the talk about bringing more rail to our communities come. Because what usually happens is bus services are cut immediately.
That's right.
And so, you know, the real everyday experience is I hear this talk about rail, but now because I've heard this talk about rail, I can't get my kids to school. I can't get to this job that's paying me a measly whatever it's paying me. I can't take care of myself. I can't get to the grocery store because of this promise of rail. Don't promise us this tin city, if you will, without simultaneously harnessing our vision and wishes for this city.
So we're talking to Pete White, a very advanced voice in the city with LA CAN. I'm doing this article for Yes Magazine about this campaign. I don't have it exactly right, but I say that fundamentally this fight over the million hours is a fight between, it's a war over two visions of the city. One's a vision where the working class of color is at the center, where buses are at the center, jobs are at the center, housing that people can afford is at the center. The other is a gentrified rail-based system in which the corporate profits raiding the public coffers, by the way, that all these rail projects are coming out of your taxes, but they're going in the hands of Tudor Saliba, they're going in the hands of Parsons Brinkhoff, who in return are giving contributions to all the members of the MTA board. So they have a vision of a city, too, which essentially, in the end, in my image of the city, is going to be like a hollow shell. It's going to be like hotels. It's going to have train lines, most of which never get finished. They'll sort of end somewhere. You know, have some wealthy people driving in their cars because they won't really relate to the train system. They'll just be happy it was built. The working class, if we don't stop it, is going to be dispersed and really pushed out. And I just was talking to some people from Detroit who said, you know, don't think LA is only 30 years behind Detroit. If you keep going the direction you're going, you're going to have the same thing, a gentrified city, but with no people who can afford to live in it.
No, I totally agree that that's the direction in which we're pushing. And if poor people in the city don't have a vision, they're going to get this Manhattanization of Los Angeles in the core. I mean, it is very clear as we look at the AEG campus right. in downtown Los Angeles, what's going on. And when I talk about the campus, I'm not just talking about Nokia and LA Live. I'm talking about the boutique motels. I'm talking about the $1 million and $2 million condos and lofts attempting to attract a higher earning tax base. And when you look at planning tools and you think about downtown, you know, before the CRA was dissolved, some of the CRA's extended borders for downtown went all the way down to Florence and Slauson. Now, I'm a South Central Los Angeles native, and I never in a million years imagined that downtown would extend from what we traditionally know as downtown right. to Figueroa and Florence. And so it is imperative that everyone listening talks to other people about this idea of a tale of two cities and pick the city that you want. Is there enough room for all of us? Yes, there is. However, I think we all need to come to the table to talk about what a vision of equity really looks like. And a vision of equity isn't trains that go to nowhere. It isn't discontinuing bus lines that are essentially the lifeline for people in our communities who are largely renters and who are largely poor to get to those much needed services. And so we stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters at the Bus Riders Union, and we're going to fight for this city because it's our city. As we say, whose city? Our city.
Well, I think that this is a great slogan, and, you know, we're I think what's exciting about this is that in 1992, when the urban rebellions happened, we wrote Reconstructing LA from the Bottom Up, and it really was, Pete, a sort of a vision of what kind of city do we want. And I think at the Bus Riders Union, even, I feel like a little time we've sort of gotten off track a little bit. We've been so busy fighting the MTA and fighting the MTA about this service cut and this fare increase that we've even lost our ability to say that this is a bigger fight. This is a fight over whose city this is, and that of which these are one small but very, very important piece. And I was reading about, I mean, these are our own members, but as you say, how do we explain to somebody that a bus cut adds an extra half an hour to a person's life who has to go to work? Or that means another half an hour coming home. Well, that's an hour taken out of your work because Antonio Villaraigosa and the MTA board wanted to cut a million hours. Or what does it mean to be late? This whole issue of being late. Anyway, I want you to get the last word. But I think this back to the thing that I'm excited about, the fight against Prop R, is we're going to pick up where you are going, which is this is really a fight over the future of the city. And there's two visions of the city. And we got a better one. But in order to get a better one, we're going to have to defeat the corporate one.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we have some worthy, deep-pocketed folks on the other side in terms of them buying their way through our systems, through our departments. However, I do believe that pressures are forcing people together. I think pressures are forcing us to communicate in ways that we haven't traditionally communicated across a variety of lines and across a variety of what we've seen traditionally as barriers. And I think people are ready. I think people are ready to move. I mean, it's very clear how the Bus Riders Union and the Strategy Center has sustained itself over all of these years. And not being very popular. You know what I mean?
That's
because
right.
whenever you're talking, whenever you're telling the truth, you don't tend to be all that popular. But the fact that you're still here and you're still growing lets us know that we're doing the right thing, that you're doing the right thing. And so, I mean, my last word is we just need to figure out how to create echoes around our vision of the city and bring people together.
Well, thanks, Pete White from LA Can. When I was in high school, I always wanted to be popular, to be like student body president. And then I heard Malcolm X, so I said, oh, I get it. No, that's not the point. The point is to say what you really want to say and to be excited about your own views and to win people to your own base. And I think you, if I can say, you model a lot of those characters in L.A. right now, and you do, quote, tell it like it is, and you also back it up with a good vision, and you got the facts, and you know the numbers, and you know where the bodies are buried. So nice to have you on the show, Pete White. We'll have you back
again. My pleasure,
man.
Thank you.
As always, I want to thank you for listening to Voices from the Frontlines. This has been your host, Eric Mann.